Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Well, the deadline has come and passed. Governor Newsom signed nearly 1,000 bills into law, 997 to be exact. But others were stopped in their legislative tracks. Newsom vetoed 169 bills, amounting to roughly 14.5%. Collectively, the outcome of the legislative session has a larger tone and message of the governor's priorities and perhaps political ambitions. Emily Hoven writes the Daily What Matters newsletter for Cal Matters and joins us with a comprehensive roundup of some of the bigger surprises as well as the larger message about how these new laws reflect California. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
Yes, so a veto rate of 14.5%, how does that fare to the governor's previous years?
Yeah, so it's one of the higher veto rates that he's had. His first year in office, he vetoed about 16.5% of bills. That was in 2019. And then obviously in 2020 and 2021, the pandemic hit and that kind of messed up the legislative process. And so lawmakers actually sent much fewer bills to his desk overall because they really had to focus on what they were trying to do with the pandemic. And so he had rates those years of about 13% and about 8%, respectively. And so, you know, this is definitely one of the higher ones. And what I think is interesting is that the governor's office is not hiding that fact. In fact, they're actually somewhat celebrating it. They put out a very interesting press release yesterday in which they touted the fact that he had vetoed about 170 bills and said that in doing so, he had saved taxpayers billions of dollars.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. I got that release as well. So where is California financially? I mean, the past couple of years, we've had a record surplus.
Yeah, it's one of the, we're in the middle of sort of this economic roller coaster because for the past couple of years, we have been basically drowning in surplus money. We've had massive budget surpluses, and this has allowed the governor and the Democratic legislature to direct a lot of money to safety net programs and some of their longstanding priorities, including expanding healthcare to more undocumented immigrants, things of that nature. But now I think nationally with the war going on, the stock market is kind of going through ups and downs. And the richest Californians who contribute most of the state's income tax are, you know, kind of being a little bit more reticent with that. And so Newsom, in many of his veto messages, has repeatedly warned that the state could be on the cusp of, you know, potentially a fiscal downturn. And because of that, they need to be budgeting things very responsibly. And so that was kind of an unusual turn from the way things have been going for the past couple of years. But I think it underscores that the governor does not want to be in the position, if he wins another term here in November, to be slashing government programs.
Yeah, I mean, before we dive into these specific bills, because they're so widespread, I mean, they cover criminal justice to mental health and substance abuse to labor rights, education. I mean, the list goes on and on. What was the overall tone in, you know, these nearly 1,000 bills that he signed into new law? Is there a larger message when it comes to the governor's priorities?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of big brush takeaways. One is that organized labor saw basically all of its priorities get signed into law by the governor, even though he had vetoed similar versions in the past, which I think kind of underscores that he is really listening to the labor movement. They've had some new leaders take over this year that could have made a difference. Also, that's a, you know, it's a big part of the Democratic Party's base. So he may need to be shoring that up if he's thinking about some sort of national run in the future. When it comes to criminal justice, I think we saw somewhat of a mixed bag. The governor did sign a bill that would basically seal a lot of criminal records for many Californians. It's a very transformative bill. On the other hand, he rejected a bill that would have ushered in the nation's most sweeping transformations to solitary confinement by significantly limiting when prisons and jails and immigration detention facilities could use it. And he also vetoed a bill earlier this year that would have allowed certain cities and counties to set up supervised drug injection sites. So we're kind of seeing a mixed message on that. And then again, with some of the spending bills, although he did definitely agree to sign some bills that would increase costs for the state. He also did not sign many of them, citing these fiscal concerns, and that did strike a more moderate tone overall.
Arguably, the biggest surprise, which really came at that final push on Friday, was signing, or really was Thursday, signing a bill expanding farm workers' rights to unionize. I mean, this was pushed by a more than 300-mile pilgrimage by the United Farm Workers, as well as ongoing demonstrations outside the state capitol. But Newsom at the onset indicated that he wouldn't support the bill, but then that was followed with President Biden and House Speaker Pelosi stepping in, showing their support for UFW. What do you think happened between then and like the 11th hour?
Well, I think definitely having the president of the United States weigh in on a legislative battle probably had something to do with it. I mean, I think the governor realized that the cards were kind of stacked against him on that one. I think there had been such national attention on this bill and on the importance of farm workers, I think, especially during the pandemic when, you know, they were still working out in the fields to ensure that Californians had food on the table, that, you know, maybe slicing that down would not have looked too good for him. But I think what's really important to note about this bill is that although the governor did sign it in this, the ceremony in which he went out to the vigil they'd been holding in front of the Capitol and was hugging farm workers, and they were crying and, you know, very, very emotional. He signed the bill on the condition that it would be very significantly amended as soon as the next legislative session. And it goes into a lot of technicalities about, you know, how farm workers can vote in union elections. But it's this weird middle ground that I think he was trying to walk, where he wanted to show that he was signing the bill, but then his concerns about the integrity of this, you know, mail-in or card check ballot process didn't really go away. And he wants to clean all of that up again next year.
Does this also signal a larger issue of California Democrats striking the right balance between farm workers and the ag industry?
I think definitely. I mean, the agricultural industry is obviously a huge player in California. You know, the governor himself is a proprietor of vineyards for his wine and hospitality company, although that's been placed in a blind trust since he took over as governor. But, you know, obviously California's agricultural industry provides a ton of food for the nation as a whole. And I think with the ongoing drought that has really been squeezing the supplies of water to many farms as well, a lot of growers and agricultural groups are kind of having a lot of pent up frustration about different things. And so I actually think it's very possible we could see a referendum filed to potentially overturn this law, which, you know, many industries have been doing in the past couple of weeks to actually counteract some of the other labor laws that Newsom signed.
Right. I mean, not only with this bill, but also another bill the governor signed, which is a first in the nation attempt to regulate the fast food industry and worker conditions, including wages. I mean, there is a potential referendum in terms of pushback to this bill being signed into law. Was this overall a session of big wins when we're talking about unions and labor, or is it more complicated than that?
Yeah, I think overall it is, but it's actually really interesting. We had a reporter here at CalMatters, Michael Zinstein, who is our higher education reporter. He pointed out that when it comes to private sector unions, which are the ones that we've been talking about, they did see significant gains. But then some of the public sector unions did not. And one very stark example was at the California State University system. There has been a sustained push there to increase wages for non-faculty staff members and health benefits as well. And the governor vetoed a couple of bills, again, kind of citing these cost pressures. And that was, you know, I think what that comes down to is that at the end of the day, whenever you're going to increase labor benefits for a public system, like the public university system, those costs are going to be shouldered by taxpayers and by students, whereas in a company, you know, that might go to their shareholders instead. And so I think the governor is very aware of that, very cautious about increasing those pressures because he's trying to make college more affordable to Californians. And so those are some of the ongoing tensions that we're seeing on the public sector union front.
Yeah. I mean, other bills that have received widespread attention, including here on Inside, include Care Court, which allows court-mandated treatment for mental illness and substance abuse. There's a slew of bills protecting reproductive rights, also protecting gender-affirming care for transgender youth, but also vetoes like the one you touched upon that would have launched a pilot for allowing safe injection sites. That's something that the governor actually was supportive of in the past. I mean, there is a larger balancing act the governor is striking here. What does this tell you about his priorities?
I think when it comes down to it, the governor is trying to advance the progressive agenda, but he's also trying to come off as a common sense person and a common sense governor. And I think that was really clear in a veto message that I was reading yesterday, or not a veto message, it was actually a signing message, sorry, for a bill that would make it easier for the Medical Board of California to basically punish doctors who are spreading COVID misinformation and disinformation. And the governor signed the bill, but he said that the only reason he signed it was because it's very narrowly tailored so that it only applies to a doctor talking to a patient and not a doctor putting things on social media for that matter. And he also said, look, at the end of the day, I wouldn't have signed something that was more expansive because doctors need to have the freedom to talk to their patients about the pros and cons of medical treatments that have just come into effect in the past couple of years. And I thought that that sort of, freedom of speech, but at the same time, ensuring that people are not just going out there and spreading disinformation willy-nilly, really underscored the type of balancing act that he was trying to strike in a lot of these areas.
Given that this session is running into a midterm election, which includes statewide races, how do you think that played a role?
Well, I think all of these things are under heightened scrutiny heading into the election because, based on things that lawmakers are voting for or voting against, and based on things that Newsom signs or doesn't sign, all of those things could end up in campaign ads going across the state. And I think, for example, the supervised drug injection sites is a great example because I think that could have very easily played into the hands of Newsom's Republican opponent, State Senator Brian Dolley, or in the future, anyone who's running against him as a Republican who could say, oh, look, Newsom made it easier for people to shoot up in the street and then have pictures of homeless encampments and, areas in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and other places where there are, many people suffering from addiction. And so I think people always have in the back of their mind, okay, how might this look in a campaign ad?
Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Emily Hoven with CalMatters about the outcome to new laws and vetoes from the legislative session. In the last few minutes we have with you, your newsletter this morning tackles a big issue that Californians feel directly, gas prices. Over the weekend, the governor has made some attempts to alleviate the costs, but the national average of gas, according to AAA, is $3.80. In California, it's $6.38 this morning. That's more than $2.50 in terms of an increase. What is going on with that?
Well, that's what the governor has been trying to figure out. He basically has said, yes, there are certain taxes in California that make the cost of gas generally maybe a little bit higher than the rest of the country. He also did direct the state air regulators to allow refineries to switch to the cheaper winter blend 1 month earlier than usual so they can do that immediately. But basically, they are saying that they do not understand this discrepancy and why it is so large. It's larger than it's ever been, according to the governor's office. And the California Energy Commission actually sent a letter to the CEOs of several refineries and asked them to respond by today, explaining why exactly is it so much more expensive in California, because all of the usual reasons that are cited, it just doesn't add up this time.
Yeah. And now he's taking on the oil industry. I mean, that was what you were reporting this morning as well. What does that look like?
Yeah, he has said that he now wants state lawmakers to send yet another bill to his desk.
More legislation.
never enough. And this would actually basically enact a windfall profits tax on the oil industry. So it would essentially, what he proposed would be capping their profits at a certain amount. And then any money they earn over that would be taxed at a higher rate. And the money would be sent back to Californians in rebates, like the ones that the state is actually sending out this week to millions of Californians to compensate for the higher cost of living with inflation going up. And so we'll have to see if that actually happens. It's worth noting that there was a bill to do that earlier this year in the legislature, and it didn't advance.
Yeah, there's a bigger issue here when you're talking about winter blend and introducing that at a time like preemptively, like early on. Winter blend fuel emits more pollutants, and this goes along with other tricky decisions that the governor has made recently, such as keeping Diablo Nuclear Power Plant open. It was scheduled to close in 2025 due to the challenge of having reliable energy. I mean, there is this bigger issue that the governor faces in compromising his ambitious climate goals to the benefit of immediate livelihoods of Californians.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that was really clear during the recent heat wave when, you know, California's energy grid was pushed to the brink and the governor was afraid that there could be rolling blackouts. And the state actually fired up a couple of gas powered plants to ensure that there was enough energy to keep people's lights on and their air conditioners running. And so I think this is one of the fundamental tensions of Newsom's governorship, is that he has very ambitious goals and ideas. And, you know, many people agree with the concept of those goals. But then the path to that reality is often more treacherous and more complicated than maybe, you know, he makes it seem. And so I think that is something that he's going to have to answer for, not only in this campaign, but any campaign that he runs in the future.
Finally, Emily, whatever happened to gas rebates? I mean, shouldn't Californians be seeing some form of a rebate potentially by the end of the week?
Yes. So the state is, when the Newsom and the lawmakers, they passed these rebates months ago, but they're just now starting to go out. So this week, the state is going to start depositing them into people's accounts that have direct deposits set up with the state. But there are also people that are going to receive them via paper checks. And so this is going to be kind of a rolling process. So some people will see it starting this week, and some people won't see it until January 2023. So buckle your seatbelts. We don't exactly know when they're going to land.
Yeah, it's still a very busy time for you. Emily, thanks for joining us with the roundup.
Thanks so much, Vicky.
Emily Hovind writes the daily What Matters newsletter for CalMatters. Up next, illegal marijuana grows are a serious problem, but the city of Sacramento's enforcement program has been controversial. We'll get an update on an ongoing Cap Radio investigation, now raising privacy concerns as well as accusations of anti-Asian American bias. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.